I would like to call to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water. It is January 25th at 6:03 p.m.
Works for me.
So do we need to go into executive session?
We do.
Okay, so we need to stop the recording.
Motion to go into executive session to talk about legal.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 It's unanimous. Okay, so moving on to the consent agenda, we've got the December 14th meeting minutes and the November and December check registers. Does anyone have any questions from either one of those? Do you have any questions on the check register?
Let me go first.
You can, absolutely.
All right. There were two charges for postage and mailings in the same month?
Yeah, usually just one a month, but we got a little behind, so we made two payments in one month.
Oh, okay. So we didn't have a payment the prior month? Or...
Yeah.
Okay. Charged the EDM in Summit Park for 2022 water lines.
So that's the Woodland project started in 2022. So that's a charge to close out the waterline project from last year that created record drawings.
Oh, that was just their title that they started the project in 2022. It's not work from 2022 getting billed and then a year later.
No, it's likely just a phase they used in their.
Okay, that's their title, not. Okay, got it. And then IGES or Intermountain Geotechnical Services, that's the acronym. They did some soils density testing in Summit Park, disc line R and M.
Yeah, so that also related to rebuilding the road down on Woodland Place. We had to do a full geotechnical design and testing and put the whole thing together from scratch, essentially, with all the groundwater issues. So IGS was brought in to make that happen. They were subdirectly to EDM Network, catching up with closing all the invoices now that the project's completed.
So they're sub EDM, but they're billing us direct.
Yeah. I don't know. We'd have to regroup on
that. We can double dutch.
Try to like team. Yeah, yeah. And then what's R&M?
I don't know.
In what description?
DST dash disc line R&M.
Distribution line.
Got that.
R&M usually stands for repairs and maintenance.
Oh, okay. But
we can.
It's just a yeah. Then
I'll like, check in the invoices. Circle back with you.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe see about that subbing thing, and then that's it. That's all I have.
Okay, I just had a couple as well. It looks like we bought $3,000 worth of Lifetime products. Is that water bottles?
Those were the coolers for the company gift for the employees. For
okay. And then it looks like we did some landscaping work for $1,900 with Audie Wheeler.
Our favorite, 1421 Willow Lane and 1674 North Silver. They were, I think, both in, where is that? Somebody told me this morning when we brought this up. Silver Springs. So two landscaping redos in Silver Springs.
And then it looks like we did a non-DOT post-accident drug screen, and I just want to make sure whoever had the accident was okay. You know, does non-DOT mean they weren't driving?
It means it was not a CDL type random drug testing, so it was a safety sensitive position.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the date is, Steve, because
it looks like
it depends on when the accident
was on the check register for 1228.
Oh, is that when Jace? Is that Jake and Jace?
Yeah.
I think that was Jace.
Yeah.
Everything was
It was the when the dump truck backed into the other
truck. Oh, okay. And then it looks like we bought a washer and dryer.
Yeah, we lost Canyon just because when they get some of that stuff really dirty from working out.
It was actually a replacement.
Okay. Yeah.
We have some of the treatment plant too, so the guys can wash the ribs and stuff like that. I'll just take them and try to wash with the family, wash the machine.
Right. Yeah. You probably like that. I don't have any other questions, but you have three purchase orders.
There are three purchase orders that have required the board approval. The first is the Calgon, when that's to replace two more vessels of the GAC of the treatment plant. We replaced two in 2022, so we're doing two now in 2024. That's the schedule we're currently on. It did go up a little bit, but the $143,000 is in the budget for next year. It's all planned. So, again, we're going with the virgin carbon. There isn't much of a price difference between the refurbed and the brand new stuff, so we just wanted to do this whole new, so all four will have gotten fresh carbon, let's say. Hopefully delivery late spring. So yeah, that's about, I said that cost is about an every 2 year cost at this point in time. Okay. I don't know if that'll change as things change up in the treatment plant. Then the second PO.
Quick question on the carbon. Yeah. When we, our old carbon, that goes back to the manufacturer and they rehab that.
They may.
And resell it? Okay. But that's part of our price is then taking that back and.
Yeah, they haul it away for us because it's
cradle to grave.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. I think the next one is for our dump truck. We are getting in, going to replace the old international dump truck that we've had a lot of repairs on. It just seems to not want to function well for us. So this is a MAC dump truck. Casey, who is, I guess we could call him a trucking expert, has spec'd it all out. This is for the engine, the chassis, things like that. And there's going to be another component, and that's why I think we've talked about $180,000 number, more or less, for a complete dump truck. This is the big part, the engine, the cab, and the chassis. We just will have the bed later. Build in probably about April or May, start the build. We probably won't get till late summer, early fall on this one, but it'll be nice because then we'll have two good functioning dump trucks instead of one and sometimes another one.
So is that through the state's procurement?
Yeah, that's their state contract number, MA-1875, that MAC truck has. So that's how we get our, make sure we get our state contract pricing.
And it really comes with that bulldog hood ornament?
It does. it was funny, but did you look through it? Because it says that specifically.
Yeah.
It's a line item.
It has the bulldog. Right. I was like, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I know that was kind of funny when I saw that on the list, too. And then the last PO is we have one truck next year. We're getting a smaller Ford Ranger that Chris will drive. It's only like 38,000, 39,000. But we do have this one F-350 crew cab that'll go down to Lost Canyon. That is a bigger truck, and it did break over the $50,000. So I want to make sure you guys had a chance to approve that for us. But yeah.
And that's in the budget.
That's in the budget. All of these were approved as part of our capital budgeting process, but then when we actually get to the PO, we need to have you sign again, kind of thing. So.
Okay.
So those are the three POs for this month. Any questions on those?
Okay, great. Then Steve, you're still up.
All right.
Or do we need a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Oh, okay. Do we have a motion to approve the change orders? And do we need to have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda, including the three purchase orders discussed.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. That's unanimous. Okay, and then we are on to Steve's financial presentation.
So it's Sam, it's the memo. It says like something on it. There you go. That's paper. So we did end up ending the year a little better than our projection in for budget or whatever. We ended up about $1.47 million better than budget. With the amendments we made, it made it seem like it was 1.1 in revenue and $372,000 savings in expenses. But as you recall, we were short some in operating revenue, but we also had savings in operating expenses. So we made those amendments. So our savings against original budget was more than $372,000. There was a little bit of a having to cover shortfall in revenue with lower expenses. So it artificially kind of skewed that a little bit. But still a great finish to the year. The big changes comparing to last year. So you see we're up $550,000 in revenue compared to 2022. Interest, we were up about $800,000. But impact fees, we were down from $1.5 million to $851,000. And then we had the rate increase kind of mixed in there that created some increase there. So, but all netted, we came out with $550,000 more in revenue than we did the year previous. Let's go down a little bit. Our expenses were good. Let's see, go up just a little bit. I'm trying to remember where it's just as a point of interest. When I was looking at these, there's about 270 customers that have paid their impact fee and their deposit and paid for a meter that we haven't installed yet. We track that number to kind of watch Sam tracks it too for growth so we can look at that. But just to kind of so you to be aware, that's kind of the growth we have in the funnel that could come in over the next year or two. Because anybody who pays a meter fee usually this year won't actually connect this year. It'll be another, 12 to 18 months usually for the connect. But that's our potential ads over the next little while. Go ahead and scroll down a little bit. So the water sales, after the amendments, water sales were no longer under budget because we moved some things around. But the big variance was in other revenue that includes the interest earnings and the impact fees. So we did get up about $850,000 compared to a budget of $600,000. So that was all good. If we look at December specifically on revenue, we were $83,000 above budget residential. Obviously I skewed a little bit. I don't want to go into December and end up coming up short. So I try to make sure we're not going to. Park City Wheeling went like crazy in December making water, wholesale. The Utah Olympic Park also started making a lot of snow. And then our residential. So, good end of the year, kind of what we'd expect a little bit. We kind of want to always be over in December, not have any surprises last minute. All right, let's go down a little bit more. So the expenses, with the amendments and everything like that, we ended up 3.1% below budget, 8% above last year, which was kind of the plan. We knew it was going to be an expensive year with the COLA and merit and all the cost inflations and things like that, but well within what we were projecting and hoping for. So that was good. I'll go down a little bit more. Let's see. Cash, you'll notice we have a lot of cash right now because we have the bond. We got the $17 million. But the interesting thing is if you back out the proceeds from bond, we're actually down $1.8 million from last year because of the capital projects, the tank and water line and things like that. So again, we're still in a good cash position. So, it looks like we got crazy amounts of cash. Just know both at the $38 million, 17, 18 million of that is earmarked for the new building and things like that. The cash drop from last month, as you saw in the check register, we make the big Weber Basin lease payment for 2024, $1.8 million. And we also, most of the big bond payments are in December. So the debt reserves held by trustee that went down $2.5 million, that's basically all the bond payments in December. So December is always an eventful month, let's say. All right. Let's scroll down a little bit more. Customer growth. We ended the year at 150 connections. As you may recall, when we were doing budget, I think we had 140 in there that were projecting at the year end. Very close to 2019 and 2020 numbers. And the impact fees did end at about $852,000. Commentary, we had sold 35 lots, which is below their average and the lowest in the last 5 years. But so we're kind of seeing kind of a return back to. There's a lot of similarities between 2019 and 2023, not only in growth, but also in usage that we'll show you in just a second. So that was kind of an interesting as I've kind of been going through this process with the year end. Go ahead and scroll down a little bit more. So water consumption, let's just scroll to where it's just the year to date numbers. So you'll see for MRW customers for the whole year, we're down 10% versus the four-year average. If you look at the 1,710 acre feet, here, you'll see it's very close to the 2019 number. Also, if you look at the golf courses, 539 acre feet, very close to 2019. If you recall, 2019 was our last kind of wet, cool summer. Park City did almost get to the 2,700 acre feet. That's the most we've ever wheeled to them ever. And Olympic Park is definitely starting to gear up and use a little bit more than they have historically. And Summer Water, they were contracted for 700 acre feet. They took 695. But just the 2019 to 2023 is an interesting that those years look similar in a lot of ways. All right, let's scroll down a little bit more. Capital budget. We did have several projects, including Sonic Park Tank and pipeline replacement, come in under budget. We're about $450,000 under budget on capital projects that were completed. So that's good. We can just roll that into capital projects this year and in the future and things like that. So that definitely is a nice savings. Our two big projects rolling over are the land and the solar array that seems to really be getting some legs again now. So we'll have some updates on that this summer. That should be pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And Sam's got plenty of money because he saved money to do some more engineering design work in 2024. So capital budget is looking good for next year. Oh, that's the $425,994 that we are under budget. And I think that's, is there one more page? Oh, these are just the appendixes, kind of the more full revenue, full income statement, say, and full next page is the full cash if you get interested and want to look at that.
I had a question on that. Just we kind of switched to our departments and the budget that now everything's just kind of under administration. But would you say that a majority of the difference was the COLA and the merit that we have for this year, or did we have some new positions that were in there that added to the change?
The COLA and merit added. Jessica coming on at the end of the year kind of added in a little bit, but since we were under budget, we knew we could do that. I'm blanking as there was another position in 2023.
We hired five seasonals.
We did hire five seasonals.
We had a new project coordinator that started in January.
Yeah, because Stacey, right, was a kind of a new position.
So we kind of did some shuffling internally.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those, that was probably it. Because when you think of for 2023, we had a 10% COLA and a 3% merit, so 13%, and our total expenses went up 8%. Obviously, payroll's not our only expense, but it was still a big part of that 8% increase.
But we'll keep those same budget categories for next year.
Yes, we have committed to kind of doing that admin. Just, it was kind of a lot of small departments that were basically being all managed together anyway, so it was just easier to kind of consolidate those into one admin department. And with some of the restructuring with the general manager, and made more sense to kind of combine all those salaries and not put Andy in the engineering budget, you know, kind of thing. So that's why some of those changes. Okay. All right. And then, oh, the graph.
My favorite graph.
The graph.
So you can see December basically went back to, hey, well, that's what we should see. We should have seen an increase because of the rate increase in customer growth, where during the summer it can move so much with usage, we were below budget a few times. So kind of how we started the year, we were above previous years because that made sense. Mm-hmm. Usage throws us off during the summer, but at the end of the year, it's all kind of working out how it should have. So, and we're putting the rate increase in place for the bills that will go out on January 31st, the 8%. And then the high elevation will be effective February 1st and go on the next bills.
Right.
Any questions or thoughts? Year ended well. I'm hopeful this new year, the $800,000 in impact fee has got me a little nervous, although the school district did, we did get like $100,000 impact fee from them in January. So at least we're off to a good start.
I gotta say, real estate's been surprisingly strong in January already. So I think it's.
I noticed that. I think I've seen three or four lots already sold up in Promontory in January, and that's more than they usually do in January. So maybe the interest rate's coming down.
Was the schools on Harley's and Trailside?
All right.
Great presentation, as always.
Thanks.
Your crystal ball is pretty clear.
Okay, Sam.
So we've got a couple things. We can start with this Signal Hill effort. So this kind of stemmed from a conversation with Mike. We contracted with another treatment specialty group. They're a national firm, but have a really strong local presence, especially strong in process. To kind of take a look at the work we've done over the past year and even prior to that. Get a second set of eyes on things and just make sure we're on the right track, not missing any big picture issues, sort things out. So it was, from a budget perspective and schedule, wasn't a ton of time or effort, but I was really impressed with the Corollo group. That's who we use, the Corollo engineers out of Salt Lake, Alan Dominoski and his team. They kind of definitely went above and beyond given what was handed to them, and they're obviously super sharp, and I thought it was a worthwhile effort. So I didn't include the actual deliverable. We kind of wrapped things up with a workshop, some PowerPoint slides in person, again, to try and keep that budget number as low as possible. But happy to provide that to anybody that's interested. It's not a real polished, finished, like memo handoff document. So just let me know if you want a copy, and I'll shoot it right over. In general, the Corollo team was really complimentary of the Jacobs work. They work together frequently. They even team on projects. It's a small world. And, you know, I'd say the Corollo and Jacobs team are two of the strongest, if not the strongest, kind of local process experts in the water treatment game. So that was good to hear. It was a good collaborative effort. No real animosity during the whole thing. They highlighted, you know, that we do have these existing challenges up at Signal Hill and agreed they need to be addressed.
What's block shear, by the way?
Yeah, we can get into that. So that's kind of a new concept. That's one of the kind of worthwhile kind of light bulb moments we had working with the Corollo folks. They identified this block shear phenomenon that we have just in the orientation of how the plant was originally designed. And we always knew it was an issue, but they were able to quantify it in a way that I never have. And it kind of, I don't know, yeah, a little light bulb moment. So we'll get into that.
Okay.
And again, sorry for the jargon. This,
you know, I love jargon.
This turned out to be a little nerdier than I was hoping on the write up. But they also kind of concurred and then used as the assumptions a lot of the big picture assessments from Jacobs. So in general, you know, at a 10,000 foot level, they found everything sound. They're designed to address the main issues. And, you know, in the interest of the schedule and the limited budget, they did not, for example, run down and redo all the cost estimates. I mean, it did something we certainly could do, but we were more looking at things on a conceptual level. So we didn't do things at that level of detail. So just to summarize the things that we could rethink or incorporate in our design. Pre-treatment is one of the big ones. And that flock shear issue you just brought up, Karen. So this G value is a term that's used to measure the mixing intensity that happens at different processes in the plant. And on the pre-treatment side, you're kind of trying to gently mix the water, create flocculation, and then get it all settled out nicely in a homogeneous kind of system. So in our system, we try and attempt that with flocculation, but right before we put it into the sedimentation basins, we put it through a control valve that puts a tremendous amount of energy into the water, which is destructive to the flock formation. So that's just, it's an inherent design flaw in the original plan, and it's something we've lived with and we're probably going to continue to have to live with. But again, just seeing it in raw numbers, you know, doing the math on it kind of, it hit home with me more than it has in the past. And then you kind of see that this is, sorry, this isn't zoomed in very well, but one of the goals of pretreatment is kind of drop NTU or improve water clarity and take out organic carbon. And then when you look at our raw data, our pretreatment system doesn't do a great job of doing that, with the exception of very high raw water turbidity events. So if we're in the 30s in NTU, that could be something like a runoff event, in which case we do get a level of a factor safety from the pretreatment system. But during typical operation, we're not seeing what you'd like to from a typical optimized pretreatment system. And then this is just a section of the two basins. So this is the approximate water level of the flocculation tanks. And then we're dropping 4 feet to come down to this sedimentation tank area. So that kind of shows there's no way we can fix the problem. Like the control valve by its nature is introducing this tremendous flocculation. It's introducing that head loss between those two water bodies. And there's no way to fix that without rebuilding the pretreatment system, which would be at a tremendous cost, you know, over $10 million or something. So that's something to think about. It's one of the good takeaways. And then they had some kind of creative ideas of, you know, hey, if we just abandon pretreatment, take it for what it is, maybe there's some creative solutions we could do in the plant. Reclaim these basins that were used for shuttling for something else. So some really neat creative angles that we could evaluate and potentially incorporate into the design. The other big thing is we've been tied to our membrane manufacturer, Paul, for some time. They, for a long time, were the premier supplier of the membranes we use, but there's other options. It would be painful short-term to make a switch, but I think there's some compelling reasons that we should potentially make the leap and look at other places.
Yeah. To a membrane that can take a higher solids loading.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the ideas is, hey, if
we said,
yeah, if we just commit directly to direct filtration and kind of punt on our sedimentation step, hey, can we make it up with some more robust membranes on that side of the process? And I think that's kind of a slam dunk. Again, it'll be a lot more effort, even updating all our PLCs on the skids. There's a lot more to it than just swapping out module on the skids.
But you would keep the existing skids?
Yeah, so again, a lot of manufacturers essentially make a product that can plug directly into a Paul system because they were so successful and popular years past. But there are certain things that will not play nice, like all the automation, PLC equipment, et cetera. But again, there's a whole industry that's focused around machining those needs, like Westech. For example, okay. Yeah. So we went through some different suppliers we could look into. So that was great feedback. And then again, you know, if we can make some improvements on getting some TOC out of the water elsewhere, maybe we can shrink the amount of GAC vessels we need and, get a little bit more creative and minimize expanding building footprint, which would be a huge cost savings in any sort of treatment plant project. So this is just a sketch figure showing our four existing GAC contactors and then really trying to squeeze in another two with rearranging some piping. So
do we need more GAC?
Yeah, for a few different reasons, but water quality being one of them, and then just operationally. So currently right now, we're not able to do a GAC swap out unless it's completely, more or less. I mean, we're targeting April to do our GAC change out, and that limits our ability to meet treatment goals.
We have four contactors.
There's four current contactors.
And that they hold that, the 60,000 pounds between the four of them. There's just two of them.
Yeah.
When we saw the conceptual kind of plant upgrade drawings, what, 5-6 months ago, I think this was part of that idea then too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then in those conceptual drawings, the thought is to expand the building.
Correct. Yeah.
to the south in this instance, or page left. And again, these are all half-baked ideas in full disclosure, but they're worth pursuing.
But it's the same idea as, yeah, it's nothing new. It's just a new location.
Yeah, in our current real estate, I mean, Corolla really turned this around in 2.5 weeks right before Christmas. And the amount of information that they were able to glean in that short period of time was impressive.
Yeah, no, it's a strong group. That's really obvious. So yeah, just the summary here. I think the big one is, you know, as you see, none of these are big fatal flaws or changes in approach or even different process directions. So that's good to hear. You know, quantifying this flock share, do we rethink our pretreatment system and just commit to direct filtration, and then the membrane options that we talked about. So worthwhile effort. And it was good to get to know that group a little bit better too.
I have a question. Have you shared this with Jacobs, or what did they
create? Yeah. Again,
they work together.
Yep. Corolla had no problem sharing the work, so we sent it straight over to the Jacobs team. And the same was true going the other way. We gave Jacobs work products to the Corolla team as the basis of the whole study. So they went through a couple of years worth of work that the Jacobs team put together. Okay. So yeah, everybody played very nice.
Good.
But you know, it's a small world, and yeah, they have a good relationship.
So I don't want to sound dense here, but so the flock shear is saying that we're losing a certain amount of water by using the pretreatment, and if we did direct filtration, we would be able to push more water through it. Or,
well, I guess the big picture thought is, if our pretreatment is really that fundamentally flawed, why do we stick to the process? Why not just move on, accept it for what it is, and try and put our resources elsewhere? I guess that's kind of the big picture takeaway I got. So yeah, the you're trying to create flock, larger and larger particles throughout the coagulation step. But if you shove it at high speeds through a control valve, you're actually breaking that apart. It's still helpful for the membranes to have that smaller flock particle, so it's not a total waste of time. But moving away from that sedimentation step, I think we need to consider doing that. I mean, it does add protection. It's going to be a really hard sell with operations to move away from our pretreatment system. Kind of makes them warm and fuzzy. And anecdotally, it does bear out that in really challenging treatment events, it's helpful for our staff. But I mean, when you talk about trying to save millions of dollars, maybe, I don't know. There's a trade-off there, and we gotta maybe reevaluate. That's what I could look for.
Like, what's the likelihood we'll have a huge siltation event? I mean, that be like part of the Weber Basin would have to burn.
Yeah, big runoff events, like a significant electrical storm or something. I've seen NTUs in the 30s at the plant, but that's fairly rare. But in those instances, we can run, and the plant runs effectively, and you can kind of see that in some of it's just like really high level data when we're operating at that, okay, there you go. So 99th percentile is about 30 NTU, and we're able to knock it in half. Right. And that makes a big impact on the process. So another, anecdote would be the Quinns folks who do have a true direct filtration plant, no pretreatment. They shut the process down during instances like that. Whereas we're able to keep it running.
So we're more likely to have that after a big storm than, like, we don't see that in the spring.
Oh, I have to think about it. But yeah, I'd say something like 30 would be unusual, even for runoff.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're not really drawing out rock work. It's kind of more the stream that comes in, or we still...
Yeah, it is. It is truly a stream diversion. Yeah, above the reservoir. Yeah, we're not in a spot, to your point. A lot of other treatment plants are drawn off the bottom of the reservoir from the dam, and they have very stable NTU values, which is a great place to be. We don't have that. but that's a good design. That's a good way to study. Yeah, so we have pretty extreme fluctuations in MTU for drinking water treatment.
Could we build a short-term system? Like, let's say there was a fire in the Upper Weaver and we had 100, 200 MTUs coming at us for an extended period of time. Can we just rent some frac tanks? Just put them up in front of the plant? Like a short-term solution if we ever did hit those high MTUs?
That's been discussed. WestTech has a product.
You can get filters too. Okay. You can get coalescing.
So it's not a minus. It's not a fatal flaw in direct filtration.
I don't know. Direct filtration is tricky.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it. It was a good effort. It was a good suggestion. I'm glad we went through it. Just let me know if anybody wants that slide deck.
Okay.
More than happy to talk about it, pass it on. Okay, so the next piece in my world is some procurement policy changes. So we've been discussing this internally for about the past year or so. And the goal of these changes are, I'd say, fairly minor in scope. And what it does is, the two big things for me is it kind of brings the code in line with how we've operated in the past. And it also kind of makes a good, reasonable workload for our staff and the partners we work with, you know, for their SOQ efforts, their marketing efforts and things like that. So we've got a brief summary here we can walk through, rather than going through the whole procurement code. And we can just step through these really quickly. So we added geologists to the language because we do have and do pre-qualify hydrogeologists. It's something the district has always done, just kind of makes that clear. And the second thing is we've always used pre-qualification language from a different section of the procurement code. And what we've done is just bring that into the architect, engineer, geologist section just to make things very clear. So we're not trying to take, you know, a little bit of part A and a little bit of part B and smash them together for our procurement. So there are minimal changes to the section we brought over, but we just put it in this new, or in the existing architect, engineer, geologist services section. Language to move things from a vendor to a firm. Just again, we're clear now that we're just living in this service. And then we defined a task order limit at $300,000. So what that means is if we have a pre-qualified firm we work with, we cannot use this section of the procurement code to award a contract exceeding $300,000. And if we ever wanted to use a different part of the procurement code, we're still able to do that. Andy still has full discretion to use other procurement methods, even for projects under that threshold. It just clearly defines what that limit should be. And in the past, task orders have come to the board, you know, above $200,000, under $300,000, using this method of procurement code, but we've never had a strictly enforced task order limit. So that just makes it clear.
How much do you suppose we like would use in like for geologists and hydrogeologists? Like, you know, is that something we spend $100,000 a year on or $300,000 a year on? Or
yeah, so the biggest effort since I've been here was that groundwater study. We kind of gave a couple updates to the board on, and that was I guess that was in 2022. No, I think that was around $40,000.
Oh.
You know, if we were ever to develop a new well source, that would be a big ticket item, obviously, to prepare those specifications, oversee the well drilling, things like that.
Yeah.
That probably the biggest,
for example, designing the tank would have been under a previous, this would allow us to just go to who we wanted to use to design the tank and do it, because it maybe would have been a $200,000 thing before. We would have maybe had to send that out to bid. Whereas they don't, the firms don't want to really compete or keep having to do this marketing effort for lower amounts. That's why the amount being set a little higher. So
let's just use the right firm for the right job. You know, it's in the best interest of the district. And if we have somebody that isn't a good fit, we still have other procurement methods to go and do that. So for example, this asset management effort we're kicking off, we did a full separate procurement method to find somebody else to work with. But for example, a water line, something like that, you know, we do routinely. We have people that know our system, know our standards, know our specifications. And it's, in my opinion, best interest in the district to work with someone we know will do a good job and is already up to speed. So that's an example of when we use this pre-qualification part of the team and have done in the past.
And Andy negotiates, anybody else they pre-qualify, Andy negotiates the rates with them. So we kind of know what we're getting into based on the number of hours. But.
Yeah. And then we would re-verify those rates annually and re-verify their statements of qualifications annually to make sure there's no changes in the rates or changes to key personnel that would affect our working relationship with the firms. And that's all laid out in the existing language in the procurement. So that's the, I guess that's in a nutshell from my perspective. It's more of a, yeah, bringing things in line with how we've done business in the past and clearly.
But the $299K, that would more likely be like an architectural design firm. It wouldn't be like hydrogeologist.
No, yeah, we don't spend that much with them. Usually it's more the design of the lines, trying to contain
engineering
kind of stuff.
Yep.
For example, when the treatment plant gets to, that's competitive because that's going to cost more than $299,000. So,
yeah, so it's out the window for a big treatment plant.
But it lets us do $1 million project without having to, you know, where maybe the fee's $100,000. We can just do it with who we want. We don't have to.
Well, we had $100,000 limit before.
Yeah.
It's just, this is going from 100 to 300.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's bigger projects, right?
Well, no, I don't know. Yeah, the $100,000 limit wasn't applied in the past, but there was language.
It wasn't applied in the past, but that's what the language said.
To theory. Construction projects.
So it was from basically that's the one which just went from 100 to 300.
Okay. Did we feel like we bumped up against that often?
In my opinion, we don't very often, but yeah. It's something that Sam feels is important going forward to give that ability to give somebody, award somebody who's already on our pre-qualified list the contract for them.
Like we do for architects and what's the third?
Well, this is the architects and engineers. Yeah. So they could, you know, EDM had a project and you know, if we're using, it's a $3 million water line replacement. That'd be the largest water line replacement ever done. But Sam could technically award that without having to go, because they're a pre-qualified vendor, and we don't have to go through a separate procurement.
It's nice in an emergency, like if there's a water quality event and we needed to come up with something quick, we can.
I don't need to bid, we can just go.
Yeah. And oftentimes in the bidding process, we're alienating other bidders because they're going through a lot of effort to put together a packet.
Yeah.
And then when we have the next project, when we only get one or two people bidding instead of three or four, it's because they haven't been chosen. Mm-hmm. And so our pool shrinks.
Yeah. If we had to make our design services competitive for any capital project we did, it'd make it really difficult to work for, essentially.
Yep. I like it. Makes sense.
So that's all I got. I don't know if there's any.
Do we need to make a motion to make this change?
Yes, and then we'll have to take it to council after.
Okay.
Assuming you have to do.
Okay, so do we have a motion to make this change to the district's procurement policy?
Yeah, motion to recommend to the governing board to accept the changes to the district's procurement policies as presented in the write-up by Sam Brenly and Jessica DiCaprio.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous.
Thank you.
So when we were shuffling dates at the beginning of the year, we moved the April meeting to April 25th. And after we did that, I knew that date stuck in my mind for some reason, because my nephew was getting married that day. That first was 10 days before, but my wife was on the day. And so I know that we've already moved it once. I mean, either asking to be excused or to see if there's another date. That is also about the time that we're hoping to break ground on our office. And my guess is that the groundbreaking would probably be a daytime activity.
It's WVU.
Instead of an evening.
Wednesday, Wednesday that week.
So I don't know if,
hey, there's, Tuesday's the 23rd of April, and that's the wastewater conference is the latter part of that week.
Yeah.
I've got an event. It's 23rd.
And 25th? So you won't be here yet.
Yeah. Usually it goes till Friday in the neighborhood.
Where's it at? Maybe we'll come.
St. George. Dixie Center.
And I think the week before was spring break.
That's spring break.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can do either one. So,
I won't be here that week, the week of the 15th.
Well, I can call in
on
the 25th. That's the night of the banquet. That'd be perfect.
No, but that's the day we're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Unless Andy's excused.
Yes.
But, but the 18th is spring break and the.
I could call in at spring break, but I'll be out of town.
Yeah, the 18th is fine for me. Yeah, I could work with anything.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
What works for you?
I mean, anything other than the 25th.
The spring break.
Are you out of time?
Okay.
So you're out of town, you're out of town for spring break.
I might be able to call in. I'm not sure. I won't know until, yeah, he's a team before.
And the 24th?
Fine.
Yeah. Potentially, I'm jockeying for a position in St. George at that conference. Oh. Trying to decide who's going to cover office duties that week.
And I know that's the council meets on Wednesdays.
When's our March meeting? Because would have
about
the 21st.
Or sorry, the 14th. No,
sorry. I got it the 21st.
21st. I have the 21st.
Yeah, sorry, I went to the wrong one. Yeah, the 21st.
So is the 11th too quick?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Kind of like 20. And you won't have your financials for the month.
No. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because I couldn't get it in the pack. But yeah, that'd be too tight.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so in May, there's 5 Thursdays. Okay.
Go to the 2nd.
Maybe go to the 2nd and the 30th. I don't know.
Let's just go back to the 18th. I think it works for almost everybody. That was the original date, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, it was the original date, but we did the 25th. So.
Yeah. But
so we'll just have to renotice the date.
So we'll be minus Lisa and Ian.
Maybe.
Yeah. Add
MD person, but
and Corey and Mike. Won't be complimentary with their
18th is fine.
Joel, April 18th? That work for you?
That's fine.
Steve and I'll hang out.
Just order us a nice dinner for my cooler.
Okay, 18th.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Switching.
I don't know if I have the permission to change it, do I? Will we get like any notice that we'll update our calendar?
I don't know, Chris said them, so
So maybe yeah, I think it'll come through.
I'll email Chris on
separate calendar right now. Yeah.
Audio plans.
Just them.
I'm trying to send this to everybody to see what happens.
Hey. Easy.
Okay, moving on. Questions on department updates? I had a question. What is LRE Water on your?
Oh, they're a hydrogeology firm that is one of our pre-qualified hydrogeologists on our list. So we have Laughlin's Water, Bill, we work with, and then Neil Burke is the other hydrogeologist we have pre-qualified with LRE. So we've just started working with them in the past year or so.
So it's not a water, it's a who?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
And Neil used to be with Laughlin Water, so he knows the Wasatch back really well.
Okay,
I think LRE was Lawrence Rice Engineering originally, but like a lot of firms, once you make an acronym, you just kind of, that's what you're known by, and you switch to that.
And then I also wanted to know what we were doing at the Old Ranch Road site.
So that's our big capital project for this year. It's an internally managed project, and I'll put together a little capital project preview for the next board packet. But we're putting a generator on site. Kind of add some resiliency to that part of the system, some electrical upgrades, and then we're adding additional surge protection. So those are kind of the three main things that are going to be part of the project.
Right. Yeah. And I have a question for Lisa's report. Are there any bills going through the legislature that we're concerned about?
Yeah, there's one, a couple that we're starting to see. There's one related to bonds. That district bonds that they want to put a cap on them at $10 million. School districts $30 million. And Dave and I talked a little bit about it. We can't figure out where the legislature.
Something happened in Salt Lake.
Yeah, something happened and they're trying to kind of take a broad brush onto everything. So I don't know. I haven't heard where it's going or what's happened or where it's been heard. But, there's Great Salt Lake stuff. There's some more conservation stuff. Some bills that didn't go through last time are now starting to kind of pop up again. I know there was something that Utah Rivers Council came out with yesterday or the day before. Something went through kind of last minute where they were exempting secondary systems under 1,000 didn't have to do the metering requirement that's supposed to be in place by 2030. And that quickly got taken to 2,500 systems under 2,500, which some people
2,500 what?
2,500 connections. Oh, so okay. It was systems, you know, fewer than 1,000 didn't need to do the requirement. Now they're saying, well, systems fewer than 2,500 don't need to meet the requirement. I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
To put meters on them.
Yeah, to put meters system. On secondary systems.
To not meter at all?
Yeah, to not meter at all. So there's definitely some on both sides. We'll see where they land. I have a legislative AWWA in and on section of the legislative day that we go to and just kind of get updates from everyone.
Yeah. And then let's see. Oh, I just wondered how many of our employees from the lead technician program completed it last year? All four of them?
Yep. They just wrapped up two finished prior to the year and two just finished. One, the last one finished this week. He passed his treatment for tennis. And we have four starting the program next week. We're doing a kickoff meeting on Wednesday.
Casey, Jackson,
nice.
Waylon, and Richard.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Did we have to turn anyone away or was it just four?
Nope, we didn't turn anyone away. We had enough room in each department. So, yeah. Yeah. And they'll be coming to one board meeting, so we'll get to meet them.
Yeah. And I had a question for Brian. Did we service 700 meters in 3 years or
500?
Yeah. Or was it just last year that we did 700?
Two days.
It would be a lot.
I will clarify that.
That was going to be one of my comments, that Brian's list of accomplishments for 2023 was amazing.
I know. He is amazing. Isn't
it was,
he?
It was just, it just kept going. So that was pretty impressive.
Like how, oh, so we have 1400 fire. Somehow I thought our goal was to service every one of them every 3 years.
Well, that's probably the 1435 divided by 478, right? That'd be 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's his goal. So they did.
They tried to do 478 every 3 years.
But they were.
And they got seven.
Yeah. How many private ones do we have? About 110?
Almost two.
Okay. Well, that.
We'll get Brian. We'll get Brian.
So, if there are no other questions on department updates, do we have a motion to adjourn?
I have one question.
Yeah, Dave Thomas didn't even make the agenda today.
Yeah, why was
that? I was good.
Great question. All's good.
True.
All's good here. Okay. Other places, there are lots of fires going on.
And then, I real quick, Chris isn't here. Both the people I was going to talk about aren't here, but, the safety online videos that he's implementing. Did the board have opportunity to like look at those and check some of them out?
So it's something that we have done. Mm-hmm. We just loaded this year's suite of.
Did you make the safety videos or you
hire a third party? Okay, third party. So it's part of our monthly safety.
Okay.
We can give you a login.
Yeah, we can give you a login. You can see.
It'd be cool to just check out
the Mr. Access on YouTube.
Yeah.
They
take
daily lists every
year. I don't
year.
Get it.
Just, you could do my trainings for the next 3 months for me, and you know, log in.
You can trade it now. So the office staff has a different suite than the outside guys. But one of the things that we've also done is we brought people inside, like last week, the CPR, the defibrillator.
Cool. That's awesome. I'm glad you're doing that. You're all online. I think that's great.
Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Alright. All in favor?
Aye. Okay. Thank you.
7:12.